In studio, the former president of the Toronto Blue Jays and the current president of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro to my far right, Paul Beeston to my immediate right. I'd have bet $1 million we wouldn't have this day. How you guys doing?
Very well. How about you, Bob?
I'm fine. Mark?
Doing okay.
Yeah, all things considered.
Day to day.
We'll get to the baseball team in a bit.
And Mark will answer all those questions.
That's why I brought Paul along.
Well, you never have.
No, there's no question.
In 40 years, I don't remember you ever truthfully answering a question I've asked you about the baseball team.
Well, I answered
team.
The question.
Yeah, but, well, no, you answered a question. Well, you didn't answer the one that was asked.
Well, that's a different story.
I just came to talk about Team North America.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well. They want to talk about the World Cup of Hockey, conveniently.
Well, at the beginning of this, before we get into the specifics of a general conversation, an announcement is at hand that I will let Mr. Shapiro make, and it's a rather significant one, I would think.
It's significant, but natural, and really only recognizing what is evident to anybody that's been around this city or this country for the last 40 years. And so we officially named Paul President Emeritus of the Blue Jays today, which to me just recognizes the obvious, which is that Paul really transcends any title, he transcends any position or stature. You know, I can't think of the Blue Jays, you know, without thinking of Paul Beeston. And so it makes more official, you know, the fact that he's going to be present, that he's going to be supportive, that when he speaks, he's obviously speaks, you know, for the Blue Jays. And, you know, I think it acknowledges the appreciation for what he's done for the game of baseball, which meant more to me before I got here, and what he's done for the Toronto Blue Jays, which means even more to me now than before I got here.
Well, congratulations, and it couldn't happen to a more deserving old man than you.
Way to go.
Well, thank you very much. But look, in all seriousness, this was, when Mark came to me about this, it wasn't something I expected. You and I, Bob, last November had a one-hour go-around at this very table. You know, and I've been fortunate for the last year to be a witness to what Mark has tried to do to bring a championship team to Toronto. You know, it's always difficult, and maybe the most difficult thing in the world is when, you know, you're gone to let go. I have tried to let go. But at the same point in time, Mark has been very welcoming to me, very courteous to me, very professional, and to me has shown the class that, you know, I respect. And when he came to this for me, like, I think he just got a little tired of saying, what's Beeston doing here? So we got to give him a title so he can say, well, he's President Emeritus now, you know, whatever that might mean. So I actually looked up what Emeritus meant.
Yeah, and?
And it means honorably discharged.
Oh, really?
They got part of it right.
Well, no,
okay,
it
but in any
it's the honorably part that we're focusing on.
In any event, you know, I've witnessed what's happened. I know where we're going in the future, and there's different ways of doing things. And, you know, I think what Mark has done and the way that he has transformed this, and it's his vision, you know. And for me, I've been lucky to be, as best I can, supportive and, you know, encouraging and being a cheerleader. I remember saying to you the last thing you said, there's one cheerleader for the Toronto Blue Jays, you know, that I never take away from me, and that's Paul Beeston, you know, because I will always cheer for them. My loyalties are not transferable. My energy is with the Blue Jays, and to be welcomed the way that I was this year, I appreciate it, Mark. And, you know, and it sincerely has kept me in the game of baseball. And at 71 years old, let me just still pretend I'm 17.
Yeah, and there's still so much for all of us, not just me. I mean, there's, you know, Paul is supportive and he does pick us up after the down days. But, you know, I think he understated the advice and perspective he's given me, both on just decisions and leadership, but also on context, you know, and history. And so I think whether I speak for Ross, too, because I know, you know, those guys, their offices are right next to each other. And, you know, it's been really an important part of our transition.
So how much time have you guys actually spent together during this season?
Ooh, I don't know. A lot. I mean, we're all in the office together every day. So it's informal. It's not formal.
Did you actually ever leave Paul?
No, he's never left.
You've never left,
actually,
have you?
I never actually left because I got lucky, Damien. See, here's what happened, okay? I was to stay to the end of January.
Right.
But then they went to spring training. So I just stayed. Okay. Then the season started. They were too busy to
His
worry about where I
up,
was.
I think there was a Seinfeld episode with Kramer who just stayed.
I just stayed. But you know what? At the same point in time, you know, I tried to be what I could to make sure that the transition was smooth. We are not Cleveland. We are not the United States of America. There's a big country to explain to Mark. There's a city to explain to Mark. Yeah. There's a reason why we did things. And, you know, Mark would come in and sit down and ask me why we did certain things the way we did them. You know, I would tell him why we did them, what the basis of it was, and, you know, let him make his decisions where we're going to go from there.
I'm thinking of one thing in particular.
I was going to say, can we have an example? Of what,
do you want to share that?
Give that example?
Can you go ahead.
Well,
come on.
No, that's not in seriousness. There's been, it's too many to even.
Give us one.
I was thinking of when he said it was, one of the many things I sat down and said, Paul, the Saturday day games, because that's pretty unique here, just us and the Yankees, that's it. You know, what was the thought behind that? You know, have we done a lot of focus groups? You know, what was the research behind that? You know, did you consider alternatives? What's the history to that?
Didn't need to consider alternatives. Because really, you know what? I like barbecue on Saturday nights, and you can't play Saturday nights, you can't barbecue. So why would you be playing on Saturday night?
And Mark said, you'll see.
And Mark looked at me as if I was crazy. You know, like if I really had, you know, it was that simple. And, you know, and it was that
and
simple.
And he said, that simple. That's all the research I needed.
That's all the reason. Meanwhile, you know, now we've got groups that study all these things. We've got detail. We've got computer programs. We've got everything else, but it'll still come back to it. Fills up Saturday afternoon, and we still get home to barbecue Saturday night.
I guess my question would be, why couldn't this have happened last fall when you came in? Or what did you need to go through this to get to this point?
No, I don't think so. I think it was, I'll be very honest with you, David. I think it was very seamless from Mark's my point of view, if that's what you're talking about. Because, you know, at the end of last year, I mean, let's be honest about it. Mark came in a very difficult period. Mm-hmm. The team was successful.
He laughs.
We had a beloved general manager. We had all these issues going on. Mm-hmm. And there was going to be a change, okay? Right. And, you know, when you bring in change, when you bring someone in, things are going to obviously be a little bit different. But, you know, from my point of view, like from the day he came in, from the day I phoned him, I mean, basically said, look, whatever I can do to make your job easier, to make you more successful, my goal is to see the Toronto Blue Jays be successful. And anything I do to make you successful is something that I'm 100% behind.
Yeah.
So it was anything different than that.
Of course, your motivation to do that, at least in part, was to keep your office, which you've kept for 40
years. Done nicely.
And, I mean, even when you went to Major League Baseball, even when you abandoned the Toronto Blue Jays and went to the Evil Empire, you still kept the office.
That's not the Evil Empire. The Evil Empire's up in the Bronx.
Well, that is the other
now,
Evil Empire.
And now in Boston, on the Milky Way.
How many? Yeah, there's more than one Evil Empire, I believe, now.
There's definitely at least two.
Mm-hmm.
So when you communicate, do you go to him? Does he come to you more?
Paul comes to me more and just in support, and that's really it. You know, more and also giving me interesting things to read on leadership, on, you know, talking about his experiences, but... You know, if it's, he will not initiate a conversation with me about Toronto Blue Jays business. You know, it's me coming to him, or just us natural. I mean, I know this sounds hard to imagine, but it's natural conversation that, you know, we're in the same proximity, and, you know, the conversation might start about the game the night before and then naturally go to something else on my mind. So regardless of the conversations, trying to understand the historical context of the building as we think about re-envisioning the building, talking about Dunedin, it can be talking about the team and Bobby Maddox, and it can be anything, you know, but you know, it's a range of topics, and I just know, you know, for me, being able to tap into that, I know that's there anytime I need it, and that was the first thing Paul said to me, and you know, he's lived that. I know that I can go in there, whether it's a tough decision, a personal decision I have to make, you know, I can bounce it off him, and I'm going to get years of advice, which I've always lived my life like there's something to learn every day from someone around you, whether they have more experience or less experience. And I'm going to tap into Paul's wisdom because it's going to make me better and us better as an organization.
Do you think there's been a cultural adaptation necessary on your part coming to a different country, to a team that doesn't focus on one market but rather focuses on 37 million people from coast to coast?
Well, the second part of it's not cultural. That's just a business adaptation.
All right.
You know, that and that's one of the reasons I'm here.
But do you notice
the cultural
a Canadian difference?
I think that I came in with the mindset from day one to embrace that, you know, and hope and to be very aware and sensitive that I'm not going to look at things through the lens of an American, that I need to understand what it means to represent the entire country. I need to understand the pride and learn over time, not profess to understand, you know, what it means to be Canadian. And I think my hope would be that over time I'd be like many other Americans who have spent a lot of years up here, which I hope to spend, that you get accepted, you know, as part of the community, even if not, you know, as a natural born Canadian. So it's something, again, I would look, state it this way. It's something my wife embraces, that my kids embrace, that, you know, we want that. And I think we're aware of that, and we're willing to listen and learn, and we have respect, deep respect.
I think it's fair to say that things were tough in the first few weeks. Fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Do you feel like, Paul's laughing for those of you who can. Do you feel like you have weathered the storm, and did Paul play a role in helping you get through those difficult weeks when
I think
you probably felt like
the
city was not being terrifically welcoming at the time?
I've been through other tough times, maybe not with that level of, maybe not that unexpectedly, you know, right. But I've had some moments where, some very tough moments where I've made some trades, you know, and had to go through a major turn of the entire Indian organization after an 8-year playoff, you know, 2 American League championships, 6 division titles, and had to turn the whole team over, and made the trade that kind of signified that. I was the flashpoint at that. That was pretty tough. Paul's words to me were, hey, just get through this and we'll start playing baseball, and this won't be the focus. You're the focus now because we're not playing. That's what he said to me.
Which is sort of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, Damian, I mean, that's what, when he came in here, you know, we had 4 months to go from the time he started to the time we started spring training, and before the stories became the players themselves, mm-hmm. you know, and what was going to constitute the team. And I think Mark got through that. I mean, a lot of challenge, a lot of people to meet, a lot of meetings to have, get to know our organization, get to know ownership, get to know pretty well everything. I said, just get through this. If we get through that, we get to spring training, and then the story is the team. And, you know, then you don't become the story. Up until then, you're the story, whether it's trades, whether it's, you know, signing players, whether it's, you know, the constitution of the coaching staff, all of those things, you know, the minor leagues, it makes it, it makes it so that, you know, you are the focus at that point. But once you get to spring training, now it's the team, you know, mm-hmm. So you take 60 guys down there, and then all of a sudden, how's it get cut down? You know, who's going to make the staff? We're going to have, you know, good stories. Why? Because Sanchez is going to be a starting pitcher. Yeah. Is he going to be a relief pitcher? I mean, all those things that's what the game is all about, you know.
And the only time Paul's been no help to me is through, like, every one of those decisions, like the Sanchez decision. Like, hey, good luck, big boy. Good luck. That's a tough one. I can't wait to see what you do with that one. Everybody's watching.
Well, you remember everything I say. That was I remember still that was Sanchez. Oh, Sanchez, now it's 5-2, 6-2. 7-2, you know,
this is getting good. That's what he said.
This is getting good. I'm going to watch this one. This is very good.
I don't know whether it's fair to say that you had issues with ownership. It was an interesting evolution. That final year. Has ownership endorsed Mr. Shapiro's decision to make you president emeritus, or do you care?
Of course you care, but you'd have to ask Mr. Shapiro that one. But,
yes.
You know, we're not talking about somebody who doesn't cover all of his bases. We're not talking about someone like myself who not have the same attention to detail as, oh, I forgot to ask, okay? So I'm assuming that, they would be okay.
Yeah, I talked to everybody involved, you know, which is obviously a broad group of people, and there was universal support, not one word. I think I explained my reasons for it and how strongly I felt, and everybody was supportive.
So Beeson will continue. This is sort of like getting the honorary degree from the university you never attended, right? You get to go, and they put a gown on you, and they give you the honorary degree, and it really doesn't mean a damn thing.
No, but development gets to you right, then asks you to write a check.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I think it means... It doesn't mean anything because it's a continuance of what's already transpired.
It's a formalization.
But I think it formally recognizes what I want. I don't want anyone ever walk in that building and go, what's Paul Beeson doing here? And I think that matters to me, you know, that no one should ever walk in and go, what's Paul doing here? I think this is it. That's what he's doing here. He's doing the same thing he's always done, you know, maybe not, you know, making the decisions, but he's contributing, you know, he is driving, he is supporting, and he's rooting, and he's pulling, and he cares. I think so. That to me, This to me makes that it is significant in my mind, significant to me.
I mean, would it be fair to say, I mean, last week you added Ben Sherrington, who's going to join the organization. Some people have come in the last number of months. Some people have left the organization. That this is part and parcel of you building the organization that you'd like to have here. And it's taken some time.
I guess this is formally recognizing something that I knew from day one, which is, again, I think respect is integral to running an organization, and respect and humility, those two things. So humility means you don't have it figured out and you learn something every day. And respect is understanding, respect for history, tradition, the past, the present, the future, people and what they've done, how much they care. So, but really, this one's pretty unique. I mean, there's not many organizations that still have the first employee of the organization, in place and caring as deeply with as much to offer as Paul. So I can't say how I would handle it with any place else or anyone else, but this felt like a natural and the right thing to do.
And I'll say this, Damien. I mean, that's the way that Mark and Ross have treated me. I mean, they've treated me, in a manner that, I could only be thankful for. I mean, they've never, ever looked at me and said, I don't know what he's saying. They never looked at me and said, we don't care what you're saying. Never looked at me and said, look, anything you can do to help and promote the team and, some advice you can give me. I appreciate what he just said. I mean, that to me, when we talk about humble, that's humbling to me, because usually people don't say that about me. And when they do, I've got to recognize it and say, look, I can look for the last 10 months and say, that's the way I was treated. So his words weren't any different than the way that he's acted, and we're all in it together. I mean, there's nothing I want to do more.
It's hard
enough. I told him, I said, nothing more I want you to do more than to win the World Series this year. I mean, I told him right
from
the beginning.
That's the bottom line
there. I mean, win the World Series.
We all want the same thing. So if we can pull our experiences, if we can pull our intellect, if we can pull our perspectives, our talents to help it, we're all driving for the exact same thing. Same thing everybody wants.
Right. How many times have you been on the field this year?
You're looking at me. If you took sunglasses off, I would know.
If I take the sunglasses off, you would know.
I could be looking at those things. I've been on the field on two different occasions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, on opening day, and then I took a guest down there at one point in time when I knew Mark was out of town. and opening day. And there's another example. That was done by nobody other than Mark. When I throw out the opening pitch on opening day, and I told him no. And he said, I owed it to my grandson.
So I manipulated.
You bring your grandson, manipulated. Oh, and it
nice
was one
move.
Of the great
nice.
Was oh, one of the done. Great thrills that I've ever had. It kind of brought to conclusion my time actively with the baseball. And I had my grandson with me, and it was
pretty cool.
It was a cool moment. It was a really cool moment. So that and one other time.
I ask that because I wonder if this allows you to be more present.
He's present. He's been.
I know
his
he's
office.
Present to you, and he's present to the people on the staff, but
To the public, they didn't know you were still around.
No, exactly.
Well, I did because I knew he'd never give up the damn office. But otherwise, you wouldn't have any idea.
I have.
Will
no
you be
intention.
More visual?
No, absolutely not.
Will you go to spring training next year?
No, I would hope you will. But if I do, it'll be for a day or two. But that would be the extent.
Well, that's
of
usually that's not, what you do anyway.
Well, I do it four or five times, though. This time I only do it the one. But if I was to go, but that's not the intention. Look, I said earlier, when it's tough to let go, but you have to let go.
And right, I
let
understand.
Go, and until such time as I think it, I feel comfortable doing it, and I wouldn't feel comfortable. No, you won't see me any more than you saw me for the last 5.5 months. I mean, that'll be the extent of it. But anything that Mark needs, or I'll go out and I do my speaking and all those types of things, promoting the ball club to the best of my ability. That's what I'll do, but there'll be no interviews. I mean, I do this annual interview with you, but that will be the extent of it. So no, I don't expect to be on the field.
All right, let's get to a topic here. Eventually we'll talk a little bit about this baseball team, but I mean, let's get to a topic that I kind of thought initially before I was told why you were coming in, you might be prepared to address, because it's around the time of year that you, Mark, had indicated to me that you would probably have some kind of an announcement, and that's the future of your spring training site in Dunedin. And I mean, Beeston and I have been there since 1977. Yeah. It has been the home base for the Toronto Blue Jays, but it's never been without problems is the wrong word. It's never been the
logistical concern.
Yeah, it's never been the perfect place. We are fond of it because it's quaint and it's been the same basically since day one. But you guys have been evaluating and reevaluating, and Dunedin has been evaluating what your needs are. Can you report anything?
Well, we're heading down there next week to address the city council and kind of lay out a plan. You know, so again, that's the first step. These things, as Paul knows, are very complex because they involve city, state, county, and Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep.
You know, all four are participants in how you put a deal together. I'm positive. I think it's taken me time. And again, this is one of the things from an educational perspective Paul helped with. I did have some experience looking throughout Florida at alternative spring training sites in Cleveland. And what happened, we ended up in Arizona.
Yeah.
And so I have a full understanding of the challenges of putting together a deal in spring training. And I think what I found is probably where Paul ended up, you know, is that there are a lot of positives with Dunedin. It's logistically not perfect. You know, for me, there was one major hurdle they had to cross, and that was find a way to, and this is something we've talked about, there's pluses and minuses to it, but it's important philosophically to me, find a way to house major leagues and minor leagues together or to have one training facility, really. And even if it meant the challenge.
Why is that important? I mean, because we're basically, for those people who haven't been there are two facilities, essentially, and the minor league guys are about 10-minute, 15-minute drive away from the ballpark.
So I feel like from a culture standpoint, you know, to have consistency of philosophy, identity, values from major and minor league staff, from major and minor league players, from support staff, from office staff. You know,
I
want everybody in one place. I want Ross to be able to come out and be able to not have to drive 10 to 15 minutes to see the double A manager and the A ball manager. I want him to be able to meet with Gibby in the morning, then walk across the hall and sit down in the staff locker room in the minor leagues and spend time with them.
Is that even accomplishable given the geography?
So it is. Yeah, it is. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge, but so we have that plan.
I'm trying to think of where you put a minor league.
So you take some of the land.
How many houses you got to knock down?
Not houses, the softball fields that exist right beyond the.
You can make. You can create a minor league complex that's big enough in that.
We
space?
Can create a complex. But we can't put the stadium there. We'd have to keep the stadium where it is, and just, you know, remember you play 14-15 games, so we drive over for the games, which I have experience. We drove only a mile, you know, in Goodyear to play at our games. It's really. It's not that big of a deal.
So how far would they be apart?
About a mile?
No, they'd be together.
They'd be together, a mile from the stadium.
Well, no, they the same distance. The stadium would be where it is.
Oh, okay.
Let me fill in because the concept works. I wish I'd thought about it, and I had not thought about it. The concept is basically everybody is together in the minor league complex as we know it right now.
Yeah.
And as you know it, and which we call Matic. You know, they expand that. They build new clubhouses. They build new offices. That's where it happens. And then for the games itself, you then go back to the other places. So that's, as Mark says, 15 games. So that's it. So they're not housed there. They're all housed together.
Right.
But at the Matic Complex.
At the Matic Complex. But there is no stadium.
All of our practices are there.
All the fields are there, but the stadium isn't there.
I think that's
what I meant.
Kind of thing where we all get off track is calling it a spring training facility. Because in reality, this is a rehabilitation and training facility.
Well, it's used 12 months a year, right?
365 days a year.
Right.
And so I'd look at it like we have a home. We have a home base where we conduct all of our rehabilitation. We conduct all of our – and we don't have to worry about, you know, when we're down there for the 7 weeks of spring training, going back and forth, so we have plenty of fields. We have plenty of hitting tunnels. We have a giant weight room. We've got the best rehabilitation. I look at it as two things. One – it is an opportunity to establish our culture, but it's also a tool for a competitive advantage. It's a resource. You know, you got to look at a facility as an opportunity for a competitive advantage. And that's what I'm thinking this could be for us.
I mean, for you, Paul, it must be, there's such a balance between, and we hear about it all the time, people holding cities for ransom, for new stadiums, for new facilities. You know, Dunedin's not the wealthiest municipality in the United States. How do you find that balance between the history of the Blue Jays, you know, and getting what you need, but also being quote unquote fair to a town like Dunedin? How do you balance that?
Well, I think that's what the negotiations are all about, David. I mean, quite honestly, I mean, I think we're prepared to pay something. I mean, Mark could tell you that when we pay rent right now, so I would assume we'd pay at least that amount of rent. the county comes into it, because it's the county in many of the instances that actually pay the money for the stadiums, whether it's Boston, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's a county over where Houston and Washington are going to go. It's the county that goes into it. And then the state itself. Mm-hmm. The state itself is a big contributor to it. And then, as Mark said, there's four people, which is ourselves. I don't think the culture or the corporate responsibility of Rogers is to hold up a community. I don't think that's it. I mean, we want to be partners with them. We want to make sure that it's good. We know right now that we're important in the community down there because of the fact they don't want to lose us. I mean, it wasn't one of those ones, you know, go find another place. I mean, let's see if we can work this out. And we will put our best minds together to see whether we can do it. And hence, that's where they are.
When the Indians moved, so you were in, where were you?
We were in Winter. So it was a strange situation. We moved from Tucson, Arizona to Homestead, Florida. Hurricane hit. We never got to go to Homestead. Yeah. And then we were forced into Winter Haven, and we sat in Winter Haven for 15 years and then went to Goodyear, Arizona.
So was there any upset to your fans in the community or whatever?
Very little. You know, the fan base that had settled in the Winter Haven was a very small number, but a very strong, loyal number. But no, very little. I think we articulated clearly, like, this is what we have to do. Winter Haven, Florida. You know, I used to laugh because my dad used to come in and go, I love this. This is old school spring training, you know. And I was like, yeah, it's great when you visit for 3 days.
Yeah.
But to run a business out of there, the infrastructure was just archaic. You know, we had terrible facilities. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed for our major league players. This is Winter Haven. For the locker rooms they had to go into and the weight room they had to work out in. And here's what happens. And this is happening. And Dunedin, Paul and I have talked about it. Players talk.
Right.
Players talk, and so they see what the Pirates now have in Bradenton. They see what the Red Sox now have in Fort Myers. You know, they know, and they're saying. Then they walk into what they're in, and they say
it's a competitive
disadvantage
when you're in, like, looking at free agency and all those kinds of things. Maybe a small thing,
but this is the cool thing about Dunedin. It can be an advantage because, as Paul says, best airport, one of the best airports ever
in the world.
You know, so it's 25 minutes from that airport. There's housing for, whether it's an A-ball trainer or a 10-year major league veteran, you know, there's great housing all within a driving distance of there.
Yep.
And a lot of players want to live there in the off season for tax reasons, but also just because it's warm weather in Florida. So, and close to Latin America. So there are a lot of real strong positives besides also the community, which is incredibly supportive. And, yep.
Yeah. And you have the Phillies, you know, which are five minutes away.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Philly's literally five
They're
minutes.
Almost
so
the
for
same town.
Yeah, for B yeah. games or for anything that you want to do, you know, you can actually mm-hmm. get to them very, very quickly. So there are so many pluses to it. What they don't have is a piece of real estate, which, you know, Mark would like to have, where you put everything together. That doesn't exist. So is there an alternative to it? I think it's come up with a solution.
Yeah. Compromising, but still accomplishes the most important things. Like all of life, it's usually some trade-offs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you're going to meet with them next week, but are you optimistic? Have you had a favorable response yet? You're not sure.
We've met with a lot of the county and a lot of the city, and I would say it's largely favorable. But hey, listen, I'm maybe among the least political human beings you're going to meet. So when it comes to politics, I don't get it and I don't understand it. And, you know, we're dealing with politicians. So, you know, what happens ultimately when it comes down to, you know, a vote, you know, how many things, variables can enter in to affect that? You know, anything can happen. So I am optimistic, but I stick to the tenet, you know, with a deal, it's never done until it's done.
How long are you committed in Dunedin?
One more year. That's it.
One more spring.
One more spring.
So you need this. You need to get a decision as soon as possible, because if Dunedin doesn't come to the table, you got to find a new home.
Or I think they'd be very happy with us just kind of hanging. Yeah, you know, we could be squatters.
There's 2 5-year options. There's 2 5-year
options.
Yeah, there
are. Yeah.
So that,
but we also could just probably squat, and they would be happy with that as well.
They don't want to lose us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's been shown by the Chamber of Commerce.
And that's
by
very
the
different
City
from
Commission.
Area.
Yeah.
They didn't care.
They want it to work. They want it to work, except, you know, Dunedin, Bob, Damien, you've been there. I mean, it's a bedroom community, you know, Clearwater and Tampa. It doesn't have the industrial base. I mean, at one time, the Nielsen Company was there, and that was the biggest employer. And I think now the biggest employer is actually the hospital. You know, there may be a couple of others, but, and so they don't have that tax base.
Right.
And so, you know, part of the benefit of having, you know, a team that goes to a community is that, you know, they bring their fans down.
Yeah.
It's good for tourism. It's good for hotel rooms.
Well, and Blue Jay fans do travel.
No question.
As Marcus
no question.
The economic impact, it's a point of pride for the community.
That's exactly.
Paul's, articulated to me, but it's also a huge economic impact on the county as well as the city, because a lot of people, there's not enough beds in the entire you know, at the Holiday Inn in Dunedin for everybody to stay, so that it impacts all of Pinellas County.
Where's the Holiday Inn? I know the Ramada because we used to
the
stay
Holiday
at the
Inn is an alternate 19, and it is It is a very good Holiday Inn.
That's not the one that's kitty corner from the mall, is it?
No,
that's on 19. That was the Ramada.
That's on 19. Yeah, that's the Ramada. Right. That was the first one.
That was where we stayed for the first few
now
years.
Now we go to the Holiday Inn Express, free breakfast.
Yeah. Good.
As a former farm director, I can tell you that the Holiday Inn Express is a big upgrade on the Ramada Inn. I'll get a slander suit from Ramada. But.
Damien will come with me there, but of course Bob would be going to Innsbruck or someplace like that.
Oh, yeah, he'll be.
No, I got out of the Ramada Inn after 1 year. I went over to the beach on one of the Keys
beach,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, over to the Keys. Well, it was real interesting, though, in those first couple of years, because I remember it like it was yesterday, because everybody stayed at the Ramada Inn in year one. The manager was there. Yeah, the coaching staff was there.
They used to have those headquarter hotels.
Yeah. The major league team was there. The handful of minor league players that you had were all there. And there was one bar.
That's right.
And at night, there'd be a group of players over here. There'd be coaches over here. The manager, Hartsfield, would be sitting at the bar, and everybody kind of stayed away from him. And then Beeson would wander in, yell and scream, and then go off to wherever he went. It was an interesting thing that can it'll never be repeated.
Old world spring training was a great thing.
It was the best.
There
was a collegiality to it because everyone was together. It doesn't exist anymore because people have houses down there right now. You know, minor league players, there's so many minor leaguers right now. Remember when we were then back then, Bob, we had one minor league team.
No, I know. That's why I said a handful
now
of
you've
minor
got,
leaguers.
Now you've got
almost 200 minor league
teams. I've got 200 minor leagues.
You actually had two minor league teams, except one of them was called the Toronto Blue Jays.
Take
the break and come back and talk a little bit about this year's edition of the club, because I know a lot of people are interested in what these two guys think about what's going on. We'll do that with Shapiro and Beeston. Primetime continues in a moment. Joining us, Mark Shapiro, the president of the Toronto Blue Jays, and Paul Beeston, now the president emeritus, which is still alive, but not really.
That's a great way of describing it. And that, when someone says, what does it mean? Still alive.
Still alive. So there's a whole bunch of questions.
But Beeson says he's living and dying with the games more this year than before.
No.
That's
he's
what
lying.
He's asking.
He's the same as he's been for 40 years. I've been in the booth with him. I've been around him. He's a pacer. He's always laughing and joking and whatever. But inside, his innards are churning.
I was telling Damien at the break when you were out. I mean, you know, I thought I'd be able to actually walk away a little bit more and become a little
Not
bit more
a
dispassionate.
Chance.
And I found myself exactly the opposite. You know, I found myself totally engaged. I mean, and you know, worried about every single game. When we lose, and I don't think we're going to win another one. When we win, you know, I worry about losing the next one. It's there. But you know, that's what makes it fun. And you know, we're into September. We've got 2 weeks to go, and we're two up in the second wild card. So you know, we got to look at this as positive.
Yeah, optimistic.
And then worry about it just before game time.
Well, you do. Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. I was thinking about this earlier today when I knew you two dum-dums were coming in here. The interesting thing about September for guys like you, September 1 comes, you can't do anything more.
Very little.
There's nothing you can do anymore. This is the team. These are the guys. Firing the manager, which I'm not suggesting you would even contemplate, but that isn't really a realistic thing, you know, unless you're having a disaster and you're going to fire him at the end of the year anyway.
How do
you deal with the month of September when you spend 11 months of the year building, working, evaluating, reevaluating, talking to people, and now all of a sudden it shuts down.
I mean, it's a little bit of the microcosm of the job, right? Because you work so hard, you care so much, and that's the source of feeling like that, caring, you know, how much you care. So much of your energy, you know, all of your emotional investment in it. And then every single night for 162 times, you have 3 hours where you can't do anything and you got to watch.
Yeah.
Now, this is a month straight without the 3 hours where we're not impacting this team at all. So what I would say is two things. One, you still have to lead. So you still, you know, Ross is out there right now and he is having conversations. He's trying to help the coaching staff. He's thinking about ways. So you're still leading and you're still planning and you're starting to plan for next year. You're starting to think about player development system. You know, you're thinking about instructionally, you're, you know, we're working on the Dunedin deal. We're thinking about the re-envisioning of the ball of the stadium, you know, so you know, there's work to be done. I would say this to you, for me, you know, the way I try to do everything I can not to sit around waiting. I try to work, do as much work as I possibly can. And then I know when 7 p.m. hits or 10 p.m. hits on the West Coast that it's going to be an excruciating 3 hours, but you work all year long to have it be excruciating in September. If it's not, something's wrong, you know?
Yeah. One of the things you've said to me before, Paul, that in all your time with Rogers, now you've had a couple of different ownership groups that you worked under before Rogers, but did you not tell me that you had never had a situation where you went to Rogers and they denied you money, or maybe you never went to them?
No, an absolute truth. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, we got the money we wanted from when Nadir was here. I mean, Nadir was basically the CEO at the time, and then when Nadir left and Guy Lawrence came in, and we got the money for it. That was never a question of the money that we wanted for. Now, let's be honest about it. We never went and said that we wanted to sign someone for $200 million either. I mean, so, you know, whether that would have been denied or not, but the total dollars allow us to be competitive in the American League East, you know, because I think before, I don't know what happened where we are right now, but at the beginning of July, you know, we were number four in the American League East in total salaries. I mean, you have Yankees, Boston, Baltimore, marginally ahead of us, and then ourselves. But we never were turned down. Rogers was fully in on it. I mean, let's be realistic about it. It was never a matter of that. And, you know, we said, you know, you get the money and we can start winning, this place will fill up. You know, and the bottom line of it is, it did fill up. And, you know, and it took not only the city, it took the province, indeed the country, and from television ratings, from, you know, fan support, from the across the country. It was spectacular.
How are those TV ratings, Paul?
Well, let me get into the TV ratings. I tell Mark every day, just see this.
Off the charts. Yeah.
Well, they are.
Are you taking credit for this?
Oh, I'm not taking any credit. I want to make sure that Mark understands how you read these things, you know, so that, you know, if you ever have a discussion with the rights holder,
he also wants to be cognizant of, look at these ratings on the West Coast, look at these ratings on the Atlantic. I mean, he's telling me, understand the magnitude of this.
Well, because a narrative did develop, I think, while you were gone to Major League Baseball, the narrative developed that the Blue Jays couldn't compete with the Yankees and the Red Sox in the American League East. They just didn't have the money. Would you agree now that that narrative, when it existed, whether it was true, that is now gone, that this has been proven, and the Blue Jays will compete with those teams, whatever they try to do?
What I would say is this, you know, and I believe this with every fiber of my body or I wouldn't be sitting here today, that we have the resources necessary to compete year in and year out with the Blue Jays and Yankees. It will not be the same resources, you know, but having come from a place where they're 28th in payroll, you know, we have more than enough to be a contending championship caliber club year in, year out. We still have to operate efficiently. We still have to have a very productive and vibrant farm system that just, you can see the power of that from the Red Sox right now, who have a top five payroll, and the Cubs who are arguably have a top two or three payroll and are one of the best young teams in the game. So, we still need to do everything right, you know, the same way that, you know, it's always been done here. But, you know, and we have more than enough resources to be a championship team.
Do you believe, as I do, that you need a two-year bridge in order to keep this team competitive, and I mean an economic bridge, to keep this team competitive until your minor league system can start producing some product? Because there's a hole in the minor league system. We all know that.
We've talked about that openly. I don't know what the years are. I don't know what the time is. I know this, that you're not going to see anybody give up. You know, we all care. We all are competitive as heck. You know, none of us are going to get into a phase where we say we're just going to pack it in for 2 years and wait. So we're going to try to figure it out. You know, we're thinking about those things and having those conversations all the time and figure out how to stay relevant, stay contending. The Red Sox, not to mention the Orioles and the Yankees, but the Red Sox are going to be an extremely tough team for 3 to 5 years. I mean, that's one of the youngest, most talented teams, you know, anywhere in the game with extreme resources, you know, so we're going to have to be on our best, you know, to beat them.
But there has been a sense, this is an older team now, the Blue Jays, and with the uncertainty of what's going to happen with Bautista and Encarnacion, that next year the ball club might take a step back.
Yeah.
You're saying that's not going to happen.
You don't want that.
That's not, you know, I mean, again, you have to deal with talent that's out there. whether it's free agency or trade. So there's somewhat unknown of what we can actually execute in the offseason. There's a series of meetings that Ross still has to lead to get us to the point that we develop an offseason plan. But, you know, it's my belief that we'll find a way. You know, we'll find a way to contend and compete next year, and that it's not going to be let's pull back. I think we owe our fans, you know, more than that.
Well, let me get real specific. The revenue generated by this team in the last 2 years, and most specifically after the trade deadline last year, which saw this dramatic increase in television ratings that culminated with 5 million Canadians simultaneously watching a baseball game, the highest ratings by 2.5 times of any other program that Sportsnet had ever produced, the consistency of a million and a half this year, the revenue generated by this team this year to Rogers has been significant. That puts you in a good position to go in there and say, okay, guys, cough it up. We got.
That's when I'm the first time I'm going to bring Paul out of the emeritus status. And have him
make, good idea.
I'd like to bring in my guest presenter.
But you know, I'm not going to answer for Mark because he's going to figure this out. You know, but the reality of the situation is it's not unlimited. Again, back to Damien's question.
I get that.
Like, so I mean, the Yankees in Boston have virtually unlimited resources.
Understood.
Because they don't really care. They've got one thing to worry about right now is how much you're going to spend on their payroll. We have to worry because it's a business. But you, Bob, made the point.
I mean, you know, look at, they have generated record revenues, not to mention incredible goodwill for the company. And those are things that I don't think this ownership had ever really thought about.
Now it is. I feel the support is there. It was up there at the trade deadline, and I think it'll be there for the payroll next year and moving forward.
All right. Well, we got a couple weeks left in the regular season. Hide all the sharp instruments at
you keep
at
on
home.
Going like this, Bob. You're going to be primetime sports emeritus, too.
Well, then I'll come work for you.
There's room in his office.
Whatever.
Next
I know
chair.
It's a good size office, ain't it? Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Good to be
and
here.
Let's hope we do it again at some point. Maybe once a year, the four of
and
us
I'm,
will
I'm
gather to
yep.
chat. The president of Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, the president emeritus, Paul Beeston.